Now, they have to do, there's a story about there should be an E, by the way, at the end of rationale. Probably my wife was talking to me when I typed it up, but I forgot that I left it out. There's a story about a couple that was married, and the husband was just incredibly ugly, and the wife was blind. Right? Now, among the other talents, the husband was also deaf, and the wife was a shrew. What a shrew is, right? She just, you know, nonstop, right? Nonstop. And they got along, they had a wonderful marriage, right? She couldn't see him, right? He couldn't hear her, right? And they got along famously, right? One day, they found an article in the paper about a doctor who can cure all, right? So they went to this doctor, right? And the doctor gave them the magical pills, and the husband's deafness went away, and the wife's blindness went away, and then they went home together, right? And they, within a week, they couldn't stand each other, right? He's listening to her, she's looking at him, they couldn't take it, right? So after a week, they've been arguing and arguing and arguing. So finally, they're in the middle of an argument. Often the mailman comes, and they get a bill from this doctor, right? For services rendered, you owe $5,000. So the first thing they've agreed on in a week, right, is that they're going to go over and they're going to wring his neck, right? How dare he charge them for ruining their life, right? So they get in the car together, and they go drive over to this doctor, and they walk in. And the doctor says, you know, I rendered you a service, and neither you failed to pay. So they started yelling at the doctor, how dare you, da-da-da-da-da, you know. So the doctor says, look, you're not happy? No, we're desperately unhappy. So the doctor reaches in his drawer, pulls out a drill, right? Calls the husband over, he says, come here. He says, what are you going to do? He says, well, I'm going to, you know, just drill through your ears to make you deaf again. He says, no, no way. He calls the wife over, he says, come here, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to drill into your eyes and blind you. I said, no, you're not. He says, oh, that means that you're happier now than you were beforehand. If that's the case, then you got to pay. Right? That means that you can't come later claiming, this is when we're speaking about the debt of gratitude to your parents, you can't come later and say that the status quo right now is you're happier with things the way they are now, therefore you have the obligation to pay up. And here is obviously talk about the spiritual payment. Okay. Any other questions before we go on? Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the analogy.
The analogy is that it's just an analogy. It's one of the commentaries. It's one of the 17th, 18th century commentary by Jacob Krantz. People argue that I never asked for this, right? I was happier before, right? Or I never asked to be put in a situation. Well, the acid test is, let's return you to status quo, and then we'll see where you're happier. Right? And obviously, you're happier with the status quo right now. Therefore, you have the debt of gratitude. Okay. Yeah.
Back to don't contradict.
Yeah.
I just feel that I've kind of benefited in being able to argue with my parents about, you know, when's my curfew? Well, you're coming home at 10. Well, no, I'm coming home at 11. And, you know, battling back and forth. And I convince them, and on the basis of a real argument that is logical and they accept it. Whereas if I don't think that I would be as adept at that. If I didn't have them argue with me, and I wouldn't.
That's a good question. The truth of the matter is, you could certainly ask the fact that your parents say, okay, you have to be home at 10 o'clock. Right? You could certainly ask your parents, well, I think that, you know, maybe we could. Can we discuss it? Right. So then the answer to that is yes. Discussion with parents means they talk and you listen generally. Right. So can we discuss it? You can certainly ask to discuss it, right? And may I appeal to the court, right? Again, you are certainly allowed to do that according to Allah. Now, we will get to the point, you will see, that we'll get to the point where it becomes a question whether your parents have the right to impose a curfew on you or not. Right? So we'll see. Assuming that according to halakha, they don't have a right to impose a curfew on you, once you are at a certain age, past a certain point, then at that point, you don't even have to argue with them. You are allowed to violate their curfew. Right. Please do not quote me as having said that, you know, the rabbi in the yeshiva said, no such thing as curfew, and your younger brother Tony is 14 years old, no longer has to listen to parents. We'll see in a second what the parameters are of having to listen to your parents. But it's not as, what you're saying is correct. The fact remains, though, that if you can't contradict them, you still cannot, either you don't have to listen to them or you do have to listen to them, but you are not allowed to contradict them. We'll see in a second. Okay? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
On the base of name calling, let's say you're on a level with your father that you're working with him, and you can't really call him dad in an office. You got to be sort of professional,
sir.
When nights, like, you know what I mean?
I always wondered about Ken Griffey Jr. You know, when him and his dad were on the same team. You know, what did he call him? You know, in any situation like that. It's just one of the things rabbis think about. Hey, 24, get over. Yeah, you know, the truth of the matter is that when you're in a working situation with your father, you have to be very careful.
I call him by his first name. He says it's okay.
If your father allows you to, then your father has a right to waive it, right? Your father can give you that right, though it is something to try to avoid anyway.
When I walk out, he's dead, and I'm just saying...
If you have to do it under those circumstances, then it would be okay if your father, as long as your father approves of it, right? But it would be ideal. Somebody here said something like, sir, right? You call him sir, or, you know, some mister, call him by his last name, or a minimum call him by his last name or something.
Right.
You know, that would be better. Somebody had a question here, yeah. Okay, good question. We're going to get to that. That'll be right in the last section. Okay, so let's go on. What is the extent of honor? Yeah.
Don't support them. Was that also for factual stuff, or would that just be for stating your opinion?
Factual stuff also. They're not interested. According to halacha, you're not allowed to show that you are a pure. You are on the same level as your parents. Right, which would be to enter into the fray of the argument and to take a side, unless you know your parents want you to. Now let's go on. What is the extent of the honor that is required according to halacha? So the Talmud says that there was once, you know, that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest in the temple, wore a very fancy chest plate. He had an ornament that he wore on his chest that had 12 very precious stones on them. And one of the names, a name of each of the tribes of Israel, was carved onto one of those stones. And he wore this chest plate, and it had certain mystical powers where when the Jewish nation collectively needed a response to certain questions, should they go to war, should they do certain things, the letters would light up, which was God's communication of what God's will was. So this is something that the Kohen Gadol wore on his chest. Now, the Talmud relates that one time they needed some stones for this chest plate. Apparently the other stones had gotten lost. I don't know what happened to them. They needed to find these stones. So there was a certain Gentile whose name was Dama ben Nesina. Dama, the son of Nesina, was a Gentile. The Gemara specifically uses a Gentile as an example. They went to Dama ben Nesina, and they said to Dama ben Nesina, you know what? We would like to buy the stones for the chest plate for the high priest in the temple. We are offering you 60,000 gold pieces for them. 60,000 gold pieces for these stones. Dama's father was sleeping, and his head was on the chest, which had the keys to the safe. According to some, it was on the chest where the stones were actually there. He refused to wake his father up in order to make the sale. Right? The sages left. The next year, they were looking for a red cow. Right? You know, there's a mitzvah of the red heifer in the Torah. This man, Dama ben Nesina, had a red heifer born into his flock. So the sages came to him, they said, how much do you want for your red heifer? So Dama ben Nesina said to them, you know what? I know that any price that I state right now, you're going to pay. But I also realize that my having had the merit of having this red heifer born in my flock is a direct result of my fulfilling the mitzvah last year of not having woken up my father. Therefore, I'm only asking from you the low price of 60,000 gold pieces for the same money that I would have gotten last year. That is the money that I'm asking for this red cow. Now the Gemara says, look at the extent that Dama ben Nesina was willing to go to. Right? Here's the man who was willing, for the sake of honoring his parents, who's willing to sustain such a financial loss, and he doesn't even have the obligation of honoring his parents. Right? Now, obviously, I don't know any of your fathers, but one thing I can tell you, if your father, if dad is taking a nap, right, and somebody knocks on the door and offers to make a sale, to pay $60,000 for anything, right? Wake dad up, get the keys, and then dad will take a real good nap afterwards, right? Without a doubt, right? It's all relative to, but what does it mean, though, that under circumstances where, let's say, you need the car because you have to do something important, like go to 7-Eleven to get a Slurpee because you're thirsty and dad is sleeping, don't wake dad up to get the keys to the car just because you want to fulfill one of your own, some silly, insignificant need. That's what the Gemara is trying to communicate. It's all relative to your needs. What would your father would prefer? Would your father prefer that you wake him up or not wake him up? That's something that each individual has, the shikul hadas. It's the analysis that each individual has to make under circumstances, what takes precedence. Rabbi Tarfon, the Gemara says, Rabbi Tarfon had a mother who used to climb up. Rabbi Tarfon came to tell the other sages that he honors his mother, he excels in this mitzvah, because his mother apparently had a very high bed. And Rabbi Tarfon would bend down in front of the bed, and his mother would climb up on him to get into the bed and climb down, and he would allow his mother to use himself as a ladder to get in and out of bed. And he said to the sages, look at the dedication I have for my parents. The sages said to him, if that's all you did, then you haven't even reached the halfway point of honoring your parents. What's the ultimate? What's the ultimate of honoring your mother? You're honoring your parents? To watch your parents take, the Gemara says, watch your parents take a bag full of money and toss it into the river. And you stand there without saying anything, without insulting them, without yelling at them. That means money that, if it's your money, you're also not allowed to yell at them. You are allowed to take them to court, right? They're not allowed to destroy your property. But if it's their money, and you stand to inherit the money, to watch them take perfectly good money, which they own, watch your father go and start ripping up $20 bills or burning $20 bills without insulting him, without saying anything to him, that is the ultimate control that's required, that a person has to reach that level in order to achieve to honor his parents. Now, therefore, the mitzvah becomes relative to what they want, not what you want. Obviously, if your parents say to you, do me a favor, can you take me up to the roof, or do something, can you get me some cyanide, right? I'd like a snack, right? Obviously, those are things that you're not allowed to do, because that you're talking about imminent, you're talking about killing them. Obviously, if your parents are going to do something, an elderly father, I remember when my grandfather, my father took care of my grandfather, and he was living with us for a while. My father would get up in the middle of the night with him, we'd do everything for him. The only thing he wouldn't do for him, my grandfather would ask for whiskey. I'd ask for some schnapps, right? And I remember my father would not give him the schnapps, and he was begging him for it because he had a heart condition, right? And it was under strict doctor's orders, so he's not allowed to drink. He could precipitate a heart attack. Therefore, that becomes your obligation. You're not allowed to do something that's going to kill him, that's going to cause immediate death. On the other hand, something which is, if your parents ask for a chocolate bar, chocolate bars aren't healthy either, right? So if your parents ask for it, the fact that you object to it, it bothers you, that in no way allows you to refrain from serving them or doing what you're supposed to be doing. Yeah.
So my father asked me to buy him cigarettes. That's fine, I'll buy him cigarettes. Now he asked me to sit in a room that's not ventilated and inhale cigarette smoke so he can help me.
Okay, that you don't have an obligation to do. That you don't have an obligation to do. You have a right to take care of your health. We're going to get to that in a second. We're almost out of time. I want to finish. We'll get there. We'll take a few questions. Yeah. Some of the questions. Now, just a few more things. Your parents, if you have an opportunity, you should take the blame, even though you are blameless. Your father opens the refrigerator and says, "Who had the last beer?" Right? And you know that your mother did, right? But it's meritorious for you. You should try to avoid them from fighting. You should say that you did it, right? Who ate the last piece of pie? I did it. I cannot tell a lie. It was me, even though it was not you. You are allowed to do that, and it's meritorious to do that in halacha, to take the blame in order to avoid them from to prevent them from fighting. I never understood, by the way, George Washington, which I cannot tell a lie, it was me, chopped down the tree, and he's held up as a model of, you know, of righteousness. So why did he chop down the tree for? It wasn't his property. Okay, question. We need further investigation, as they say in the Talmud. Now this is the big one. Number six, they cannot impose on your life. That means your parents cannot tell you what to do with your life. There are certain things there where they cross the line. That means, the examples are, they cannot tell you which wife to marry. They cannot tell you which wife not to marry, assuming she's Jewish, right? They cannot tell you which career to choose, which career not to choose. They've got no right to impose their will on your life. Now, the halakhic authorities say, in spite of that, let's say you tell your parents, what would you like to, what are you choosing as a career? Your parents are thinking, lawyer, doctor, engineer, something along those lines, and you tell your parents, well, actually, you were thinking of becoming a deep sea diver, right? And your parents, they know, they object to that. That wasn't what they had in mind, right? You are not allowed to tell your parents anything sharp, any type of clever or argumentative answer. You are allowed to say to your parents, look, thank you very much. I really appreciate your input, and I know that you're concerned for my well-being and so on and so forth, but this is the decision that I've made, right? That you are allowed to do. It's always a good idea to make sure to say to your parents, thank you very much, right? Thank you for your input. I really respect that, but I've decided that that's this way. You have every right, according to halacha, to do so. However, if it is all possible, you should try to avoid it. If it is all possible to go against your parents' wishes, then you should try. You should try as much as possible to avoid doing so. If you decide you want to go and you want to study Torah, you want to go off to yeshiva, an example the Talmud uses, because this seems to evoke negative responses from parents all through history. And not much has changed in the last couple thousand years, right? I've decided I'm going off to yeshiva to study for a day, a week, a month, a year, or a lifetime, right? Your parents generally will object to that, especially the last one. Therefore, the halakha is you don't have an obligation. You do not have an obligation to listen to obey them. You do have an obligation to be respectful, and you are never allowed to obey your parents if what your parents are telling you is against Torah. And if your father says to you, do me a favor and turn on a light switch, at that point, you do, on Shabbos, right? Mm-hmm. There are certain religious extremists who don't use like electricity at all. Kidding. If your father says to you, turn on a light switch on Shabbos, turn on a television set on Shabbos, drive the car on Shabbos, then according to Allah, it is prohibited to listen to your father. Right now, you asked about being in a room where your father is smoking. If smoking, you feel smoking is hazardous, his breathing in his smoke is hazardous to your health, or it annoys you, or it causes you allergic reaction, whatever it is, then you don't have an obligation to remain in the room. You do have an obligation to respectfully say to your father, I can't remain in this room while you are smoking. Right? As soon as you're done smoking, I'll come back in. Right, so this is what comes up, that you're allowed to do. But you don't have an obligation, that is an imposition on your life. And that's what you had asked earlier about the curfews, right? At a certain point, when you are in your own control, right? So theoretically, after bar mitzvah, your parents do not have jurisdiction over you, theoretically, and your parents impose a curfew on you, that curfew is not binding on you. Now, that has to be taken with, that has to be qualified. If you are being supported by your parents, you're in high school or whatever it was, or in college, their parents are still paying for you. If they're supporting you, then you are bound by the rules that they make, right? Independence is defined as when you have the money to make it on your own. As soon as you got enough money, at that point you're independent. If you are bound to what your parents are supporting you, at that point, your parents make the rules, and you have to obey their rules respectfully. Now, obviously, you're allowed to, what you asked earlier, you're allowed to suggest, well, perhaps I can do such and such. But ultimately, that's why it's the most difficult myth in the Torah. Even though you may develop a better skill at arguing, and you want to go to law school after, whatever it is, you're still not allowed to argue with them, according to halacha.
Okay? They wouldn't generally do that, so it's okay.
Oh, okay. Right. But if they would, then you can't argue. Someone had a question.
Yeah, what about if you want to come to yeshiva to learn and your parents object, but you are still dependent on them to finance that learning? So they say to you, you can go and learn without blessing, but you must find a way to finance it yourself.
I would say then keep the blessing, give me the money. Okay. No, at that point, fine. If you can, look, they don't have an obligation to finance. They don't have an obligation, and you have to come up with the money. At the point that you, it's a rule in life, gentlemen, at the point that you say to your parents that I'm going to do it in spite of your objections, right, at that point you've stepped out of their jurisdiction. At that point, you are now responsible for yourself. At the minute you say that, okay, I'm going to do it anyway, at that point, your parents say, fine, go ahead, you're on your own, right? But don't expect finance, and they have every right to do so. According to halakha, they're giving you charity. Beyond a certain age, any money they give you is charity. They got no obligation, according to halakha, to support you.
Grandparents?
Okay. Now, as far as the grandparents and step-parents, so on and so forth, grandparents you have to honor. If there's a conflict between your grandparents and your parents, that was the question somebody asked it earlier, right? Conflict between your grandparents and your parents, who do you think gets the nod?
Grandparents.
So it would seem like the grandparents, because they're older and your parents have to honor them, but it is not the halacha. The halacha is that if you are caught in a conflict, your first responsibility is to your grandparents over your grandparents. Right? If it's conflict between your father and your mother, your responsibility is to your father over your mother. Right? In this area of halacha. Right? Your responsibility is that you have the greater obligation to your father than to your mother. You also, the oldest brother in the family. We see that the oldest brother gets a double portion in the inheritance, right? Yeah, I know, it's a tough one to swallow for me, too. The oldest, it's a practical halacha. He'll beat you if you don't, right? But the oldest brother, we see that according to halacha, he occupies a special position of honor. The Torah says that before the sin of the golden calf, who was going to be doing the temple service for Jewish people? The firstborn, the oldest. So, and you see that he gets a double portion when the father, when parents...
Does that include
the
brother and sister?
There are different opinions among the commentaries, but it's specifically the oldest brother. If there's a step-parent, so step-parents also, you have an obligation to honor the step-parent, because by honoring, let's say your father's married to a different woman or mother's married to a different man, so then when you honor the step-parent, then the parents take pleasure in that. Therefore, you have an obligation to honor step-parents also. It's called what the Talmud called mikzas kavod, you know, a certain amount, right? It doesn't say, there's a certain gray area here. I think this is the bottom line on this myth, there's a certain gray area. It's difficult to know how much at any point, right? But there is never a point that you get to where you've over-honored somebody. You never get to the point where you've completed your obligation. Question? Somebody had a question?
What if your parents...
If your parents,
the
commentary discuss, what if your father is wicked? Now, what if your father is wicked, right? So according to the commentaries, you still have an obligation to honor your parents. You, at a minimum, you're not allowed to insult them or do anything. I knew one guy in the yeshiva whose father apparently was abusive, and he told a halachic authority that he wanted to know if he could be exempted from this mitzvah. He doesn't have any desire to honor his father. Not only that, he does not want to say Kaddish after his father dies. Right? He doesn't want to say the mourner's prayer after his father dies. And he has the halachic authority. Halachic authority says to him he is exempt from it. Right? If he has such a resentment towards his father, he's exempt from it. However, he is not allowed to do anything negative to his father. Right? Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. I'm sorry? It depends. Let's just for our purposes. Let's say your father's a murderer or a bank robber, right? That's the most basic. Everybody would agree that such a guy is pretty wicked. Okay, but there are other halachic definitions. Yeah.
What if your parents had a living will?
A living will.
Right. When their body stops functioning by itself, if they don't want to be resuscitated or what have you.
Alright, so that's not unique to your parents. There's a whole halakhic discussion about
it. Isn't there something about not being able to die or whatever unless it's absolutely...
You can. It's not unique to your parents. That applies to everybody. What about anybody who has a living will? All the questions, but that's not unique to parents. That applies to everybody. Right? Are you allowed? The question is, are you allowed to make a living will? Okay.